Four pre-season wins for Norwich City both came in scorching heat. And let me tell you, the one at Cambridge on Tuesday was not particularly enjoyable to watch the game in. But nonetheless, we were there and we're going to dissect Norwich City's two friendly wins. We've got plenty more to speak about around transfers as well. This is an action-packed Pinken.com Norwich City podcast coming to you, of course, on Future Radio as well. Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Davitt for this week's show to dissect all the key Norwich City talking points, of which there are plenty as ever. We always say on this podcast, the week is a long time in the Norwich City world, and it certainly felt like it this week. But Paddy, before we get to the football, I mean, how are you feeling after what we endured last night at Cambridge? Poor little us, I know. Again, we're going off on that theme, but it was 37 degrees by the time we rocked up at the Abbey. I think that dropped to about 34 by the time kickoff happened. But actually, at the end of the game, we made the way, as we tend to do, from the stand and from the press box to pitch side to speak to Dean Smith and Jakob Sørensen, as it was last night. It was actually cooler pitch side than it was probably where we were sat. It was not a particularly pleasant experience, certainly from my perspective anyway. And I've got the wrong hair colour for it as well.
Well, yeah, and I've got the Celtic genes in my bloodline, and I don't think the Celts are particularly used to 37/100, whatever it is, Fahrenheit. But it was noticeably cooler. Yeah, it was quite surprising, really. It was a nice cool breeze. It almost pleasant at pitch side. Maybe those players would have a different take on that. But where we were, sat at the back of an airless stand, poor us. It wasn't good. It's made me realise I'd probably not cut out for covering La Liga games or somewhere in a hot climate. South America, maybe pertinently with Norwich's latest arrival. But roll on Scotland, as we said on the team news last night, by all accounts, 19-20. That's more my wheelhouse. But credit to those players, yeah, in all seriousness. It would have been quite easy to sort of, you know, use that as an excuse, the heat and the temperatures, because it was oppressive, even with a bit of a breeze at pitch side. But and we'll get into it in more depth. As Dean Smith, I thought, superbly encapsulated, it was average City first half, Norwich City in the second half, and that was very much it. But whether the heat was a slight factor in that first half, it was still 34, I think, at kickoff. But all in all, it was a good exercise in the end. But I was more than glad to get back to the air-conditioned car for the drive back to Norwich, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, likewise. And if we kind of look at the game, and that quote from Dean Smith did sum it up nicely, it kind of shows the ludicrous nature of pre-season, doesn't it? And how difficult it is to judge things. And we had a conversation last week about style of play, and that was in the wake of the King's Lynn victory. But Norwich then went to Marseille, looked very, very good, and won 3-0. We then rock up at the Abbey in that first half, as Dean Smith described himself, looked very average, probably second best as well against a League One opponent, who obviously scored before half time and deservedly so. And had it not have been for a few Michael McGovern wonder saves, really, the scoreline probably would have been worse. So it just shows how tough pre-season is when you're in this job and you have to talk about things and analyse things and look for trends. It can be really difficult because of the way that pre-season alters and the squads change and the different players get different minutes and there's no real rhythm or fluency. It can be quite difficult. And even as we sit here now, a whole host of Norwich City players are yet to play 90 minutes, and that is heading into obviously the Scotland doubleheader, where that is the aim for a lot of them. So it was a different type of test, it felt, for Norwich City last night, Pad. But I suppose if you're going to reflect on it, that second half probably offered a lot more encouragement off the back of that Marseille performance, whereas the first half to me probably felt a bit more like what we saw at King's Lynn last Tuesday night.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. Yeah, I thought the first half was still very much experimentation and fitness, and the second half was a bit more akin to Marseille in terms of fine-tuning. And while you were talking there, Connor, I've got the team sheet in front of me. That first half 11, looking down it, and realistically for me, to underline maybe why what did feel a little bit disjointed, I think, is Max Aarons, Grant Hanley, Yiannoulis, and maybe the GOAT, Teemu Pukki. I think they're the only four I would say are probably, you could construct a pretty reasonable case that they will start at Cardiff. So, you know, that tells you the nature of that first half selection was maybe more geared towards minutes and balancing off the fitness element. Whereas, you know, the second half, you have the likes of Rashica and Cantwell and Omar Bamadeli now, and you know, even Hugo, the way he's put himself forward. Josh Sargent, is again, who Dean Smith highlighted for what impact he had in that second half. It felt far more cohesive and more of a continuation of what we saw at Marseille. And I think, for me, it's probably... if you look at pre-season as a whole, it's sifting out the games where, or the parts of games where it's been more about, well, okay, there's mitigation there in terms of the fitness element, in terms of I need to get player X minutes, not necessarily because they're in my thoughts to start at Cardiff, but that's the nature of pre-season. You do need to have an even spread, really, with a group who you feel you're going to be working with. There's clearly bits and pieces ongoing, and we'll get into that, that there might be some of these players who were on show at the Abbey who won't be part of it and won't be here, won't be involved. But still at this stage, if you're Dean Smith, you need to work on the principle that those guys are still closer to the group you'd be likely to work with. But I think overall, it was another step in the right direction for me. If you balance that off with what we saw in the second half, which was energy, drive, to higher tempo, and obviously the goals that came as well. And, you know, that better that way around than kind of it tailed off alarmingly in the second half, and then you're rolling into Scotland and Glasgow Celtic and Hibs with a bit of a, well, they need to pick it up again. I feel if they continue on in the vein they left off at the second half last night, then, you know, they can go there in very positive mood, really, because it does feel, and of course we've got, you know, to come in, Gabriel Zara as well, and one or two others as well. No Byram, no Gibson last night. It does feel, you know, things are now coalescing and coming together. And by no manner of means can we say, right, we know Dean Smith's 11 and we know the style of play in and out of possession. I don't think we're at that stage yet, but there's certainly a path that they're travelling along, and you can begin to see now, extrapolating out the fitness elements and maybe that first half sluggishness that we saw, you know, real sense of, yeah, this is a group who can do something in the Championship this season. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and I thought they were pretty good to watch, actually, in the second half. There were some really nice patterns of play. It was quite dynamic. There was a lot more eagerness to press. And it was just an enjoyable watch, which is probably the first time, probably minus Marseille, that we've said that about Norwich City in a long time. And we will touch upon that Marseille game. But there's just a few players that I want to discuss from within last night. And then we'll obviously move on to that French aspect, which was so impressive on Saturday. Let's start with Jordan Hugel, Pad, because 6 goals in pre-season now. That was his second successive brace, his third brace of pre-season. Of course, got one against Dereham, one against Marseille, and obviously one now against Cambridge United. What impressed me probably about those two finishes were they probably weren't finishes that you would naturally associate with Jordan Hugel. I think people think thumping headers and kind of maybe not an excellent finisher. And that was certainly the image that he had at West Brom last year, where he missed quite a few sort of gilt-edged opportunities. But these were really composed. The first one was an error, and it's one of those kind of cliched strikes where he had a lot of time to think about it and just sat the keeper down and slotted it past him. And the second one, he almost sort of cuts inside the defender and puts it beneath the goalkeeper. They're two really accomplished finishers. And you look at his pre-season in a whole, he's staking quite the claim for himself, particularly given maybe Adam Eder's fitness concerns. And obviously, I know Dean Smith described Josh Sargent as outstanding, but there's still maybe a little bit of doubt over his kind of goal return and what he offers from a goal scoring perspective. Feels like Jordan Hugel has probably elevated himself up the pecking order. Is that fair?
Well, he certainly put himself in the conversation now, which I don't think outside of the bubble anyway, you'd have necessarily said coming back from overall pretty disappointing loans at, well, West Brom particularly, but Cardiff tailed off as well last season, and would have been a stretch to think he would be this close to a Dean Smith 11 for Cardiff prior to what he's done in pre-season. So it is testament to him. I thought the most revealing thing, well, in terms of what he's said during pre-season, was that post-match interview he gave after the Marseille game on Saturday to the club. And in it, more or less said that it really, in the off-season, as abbreviated as it was, he'd really kept the metal to the pedal and the pedal to the metal, to be honest. It is hot still. I'll blame it on that. But and really, you know, almost I took from that he knew this, that he really needed to hit the ground running in pre-season. If he was going to convince Dean Smith that, no, I want to be here, I want to be part of it, but I want to be a bigger part than maybe 2-3 seasons ago when he was essentially, you know, the cheerleader in the dressing room as Teemu Pukki continued to be the spearhead attacking-wise. to change that narrative, he really needed to impress in pre-season. And it sounds like in his own mind, he knew he had to really come back in good shape and almost ahead of a lot of these other players. And, you know, we're looking back now at a pre-season where he could do no more, really. Every opportunity he's had, he's looked fit and sharp and scored the goals into the bargain as well. And yeah, the second goal for me at Cambridge as well, I don't recall seeing that too often from him in a Norwich shirt, where he showed almost that explosive element to his game to put a defender off balance, cut inside and finish. You know, that's an element of his game I don't think I'd necessarily would have associated with him. It's more the two Marseille goals, where great balls into the box, he uses his aerial prowess and he's putting his nut on it. You know, if he's got those elements to his game as well, and then you could start to see that he looks a bit more comfortable than he has done previously in terms of general play and being a link player rather than just somebody who's on the end of things. Of course, that's a very useful attribute to have if you're Dean Smith in the squad. But that's, I felt and have felt, where Timu clearly has the edge, that he's a far more rounded striker in terms of his work outside the box. I'm not saying Jordan Ugel's suddenly going to transform himself into Timu Pukki Mark II, but if there was more evidence of what we're seeing in this pre-season, that, you know, his actual link play as well as the goal threat that he offers, then absolutely no doubt about it, Jordan Ugel could be an asset for Norwich going forward into this Championship campaign, because there is still those imponderables around Eder and Sargent in terms of their goal output. So, you know, there is a guy who can score goals and is scoring goals. And if you're Timu Pukki as well, it might just be, well, A, it eases a bit of the burden and expectation on him if Jordan was to continue in this vein when the real stuff gets underway. But also as well, that competitive edge. And we're seeing it at the top end of the pitch. We're seeing it goalkeeper-wise. You've probably seen it in defensive positions and midfield. You know, if you're Dean Smith and you're Shakespeare, they don't want every Saturday, every Tuesday to go with the same tried and trusted 11 because there aren't really any other viable options. They want essentially cutthroat competition because that will raise standards, that will drive performance levels, and ultimately that should ensure Norwich are picking up plenty of wins and points as well. So, yeah, difficult days ahead for Dean Smith in terms of selections moving into the Cardiff game, but it's great to see, because I don't think Norwich can afford again to have the over-reliance they have done on Timu Pukki in these last two Championship seasons, setting aside the Premier League seasons. But, you know, he needs now seriously good backup, assistance, alternatives, because I think it's going to be too much of a stretch if Timu is expected to weigh in with another 25, 30 goals. I think the burden has to be shared. And the way Jordan Ugel has started pre-season, he looks like he's in the mood that, you know, he can do that. But he clearly has to take it on from here. You know, it won't be enough now to plateau. He needs to kick on again. And, you know, he clearly also looks like he's enjoying it. He wants to be around the group. And the confidence is there. You can see that. You know, goal scorers thrive on confidence and scoring goals. That's where they get, you know, that belief from. And, you know, it is really intriguing now moving forward. And it's probably a debate for next week once we get the other side of Scotland moving into Cardiff about, Has he actually got to the point where you could say you need to find a place for him in that Cardiff 11? Probably not quite there yet, because that's part of a wider debate. But for now, yeah, he's doing all he could do reasonably to convince Dean Smith that, yeah, don't discount me for this season.
No, it feels like when you look at that Norwich City team at the moment, that there's probably one place that we could go, yep, he's nailed on to start for Cardiff. And that's probably Timu Pukki, isn't it? We don't really know which goalkeeper he's going to favour at this stage. And maybe we'll find out a bit more about that the other side of Scotland and the two respective games. The defence, again, I think we probably know that Max Aarons will start on the right and Yiannoulis will start on the left. Probably don't know what the centre-back pairing will be. Midfield, we don't even know who's going to be fit, to be completely honest, let alone who's going to play in that area of the pitch. And the wide areas as well are still up for grabs. So maybe beyond Pukki and probably the fullbacks as well, it still feels like there's a lot of pieces for Dean Smith to fit together. And if Jordan Ugel can at least get himself in and around it in the conversation as he has done, the fact obviously that there are five subs to play with as well, I think will work in his favour, because that gives Norwich more options, more attacking options, particularly if they're chasing games. He obviously gives them something different. That was something actually that Norwich legend Chris Sutton mentioned in his column for the Pink and App this week, actually, that there was a lot of criticism around Norwich City that they only really had one route to scoring goals last year. And he offers certainly a different one in terms of his physicality, in terms of his aerial prowess as well. Of course, there are limitations and he is all too aware of that as well. But equally, you look at it and you think, would a lot of the Championship teams like Jordan Hughill to spearhead their attack? A lot of them probably would. And that is a testament probably to the depth that Norwich City have in that position. And it probably raises maybe even broader concerns for Josh Sargent and exactly where he fits in. Although I thought he was pretty good as well at Cambridge last night as well. Just in terms of other honourable mentions, Liam Gibbs scored his first Norwich City goal in pre-season, continues what has been, again, for him, a pretty impressive pre-season. He's continuing to look very good. I'm more impressed with him every time I watch him. It just really, really simplifies the game. Plays with limited touches, but often capable of receiving the ball on the half turn and playing forwards, which is always a really good sign for a midfielder. He actually ended the game as a right back. His goal, probably a bit fortunate with his goal. I thought Mitov probably should have saved it. But he was pretty good. Pad, just quickly on Liam Gibbs. I mean, he's another one that has probably got himself in the conversation. Would you expect him to be in the round it ahead of the Championship season? Or do we probably still feel like a loan move is probably the right option for where he's at, given the amount of midfielders that Norwich City have? Of course, they've added to that with Gabriel Zara, who we'll come back to later on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you add Zara, you add, hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, Isaac Hayden. That would to me suggest it's a lone route for him, because quite clearly, and again, he amply demonstrated it at Cambridge, he's way beyond development football now. For him to go back to that level and play games at Colney in front of whoever, he's beyond that clearly now. And much like Clark's gone out, Eardley's out, I think they're keeping him in and around it, because obviously there are those issues with Sara and Hayden in terms of fitness, but also every time he's on the pitch, he does, as you say, look very comfortable. He doesn't look like a young player stepping up and a bit kind of not quite sure what he should be doing. He looks very mature, very accomplished. It's the old saying, isn't it? Good players have time on the ball, or they always seem to have plenty of time on the ball. And that certainly is what I would say to him. Every time he's on the ball, he's very unflustered, very unflappable, knows what he wants to do. And he does. He knits it together. And you know, I don't want to get too carried away on these pre-season cameos, but is he discernibly different to what Lees Malou have offered or Sorensen have offered? Not for me, really, if I'm honest. Different types of players slightly in that centre of the park, but with the right players in and around him and experience, I think he could step in. But I think it probably would be accelerating his development to suddenly start putting him in the conversation to start games in the Championship. But you could conceivably see Smith keeping him in and around the group. And then if it transpired, he doesn't get a lot of action between now and January, then there's another window opens up, then maybe you let him go out. But maybe it'll be very end of this summer window when they get some clarity on Zara and Hayden and Kenny McLean's obviously in the mix, and Sorensen and Lees Malou. And they allow him to go out. I'm absolutely sure there will be clubs around that football league who will be beating a path to want to take that guy on loan, because, you know, the word will be out that there is a very, very talented central midfielder who, as I say, is probably now at the stage where he needs to be playing regularly at a good level. And it's great to see as well, particularly with his backstory as well. I'm sure that'll lurk at the Ipswich contingent no end, that one of their own is, you know, potentially going to be starring for Norwich in the not-too-distant future. But we'll park that one for now. But, yeah, he can do no more than when he's given opportunities, as he has done. Basically look like he's very comfortable in a Norwich shirt around senior players, and he's certainly done that so far in pre-season. But it is pre-season, so, you know, again, all these assessments we're making, you do have to caveat it pretty heavily. But, you know, I think it's telling that the one opinion that does matter in all of this is Dean Smith. And there's no sense of him allowing him to go out of the building anytime soon. And he was asked directly, actually, last night, just popped into my head, you know, is Liam Gibbs a first-team option? And he said, yeah, the way he's continuing, the way he's he's appeared every time he's got an opportunity in pre-season. He is not, here's a young lad we're bringing along for the ride and at a suitable juncture we'll send him out on loan. No, Liam Gibbs is a viable for Dean Smith, clearly at this stage, midfield option for Norwich City. And, you know, if that continues, then maybe he will keep him in the building and he will get a bit of championship exposure. But let's be honest, it's an area of the squad that has been chronically underrepresented since probably Ollie Skip departed. And if you take Ollie Skip out of the equation, given he was a Tottenham player for probably seasons prior to, you know, if Norwich could develop their own in that area of the pitch, modern style midfielder who's comfortable in possession, but has that degree of athleticism as well. I know they say strikers are worth their weight in gold, but the way Norwich have struggled in that area of the pitch, you know, if they could just finish his development and he could be a real strong presence in a central midfield for Norwich moving forward, then that's really something to look forward to.
Yes, it is. Honourable mention as well for Michael McGovern, 6 years to the day yesterday that he signed for Norwich City. He pulled off some unbelievable saves, as I mentioned earlier. There was one in the second half in particular from close range. How he got himself to that, I do not know, but kept Norwich in the game, actually, and made sure that they were able to turn it around and go on to win it. From the Abbey to the south of France, Pad, it was Marseille on Saturday. This one probably was a bit more eye-catching because this was a victory and a good victory, a 3-0 win over a team who were runners-up in Ligue 1 last year. I think they finished about 15, 16 points behind PSG in the end. But will we be playing Champions League football? Dimitri Payet, Matteo Guendouzi, household names within their starting lineup as well. It wasn't a weak or a weakened Marseille team. I think there was Milik missing, who's a striker, and a couple of others around the edges. But this was a really strong Marseille team, and Norwich went there, had to roll with the punches a little bit in maybe the opening 20 minutes, but thereafter looked a real threat. It was a really impressive, probably all-rounded performance that probably left a lot of people feeling a hell of a lot more encouraged about Norwich City and Norwich City under Dean Smith than perhaps they were following that Kings Lynn game last week.
Yeah, I don't even think if you got him in a quiet moment, Dean Smith would have expected him to go to Marseille, south of France, and come away with a 3-0, and the manner of the performance as well. Really was an eye-opener. I think there's some caveats we need to insert without wanting to, you know, pour cold water on it. But, you know, that was Marseille's second outing of pre-season. They'd only, I think, had a game midweek going into that game. So, relatively, they're at a different stage of pre-season. And you kind of saw that to a degree when Norwich played the Bundesliga 2 team, Regensburg out in Germany, who were much further advanced. And obviously, Norwich drew that game, but they were a little bit off the pace fitness-wise and sort of getting around the pitch. I felt there was an element of that in the Marseille performance. But let's not take anything away from how Norwich set about it. And the other caveat, because I think it is relevant, and myself and Sam got into it on the Pinkton Plus Q&A on Monday, you know, it was very much, for me, a performance founded on counter-attacking team, you know, to basically not have huge amounts of possession, but were able to break with speed and purpose and intent. And you saw that in the nature of the goals they scored, finished off by Hugel. You know, even Sorensen's unbelievable finish, that was really a Norwich swift counter that they moved through the lines and then released Rashica, and then the ball came back and Sorensen's opened up his body and whipped a superb finish. But, you know, it was very much an afternoon where, you know, Marseille were trying to dictate things and Norwich were out of possession, excellent, as good as probably we've seen under Dean Smith, I think, since he arrived. You know, that cohesiveness, the pressing, both individually and collectively, there was a pretty innocuous throw-in for Marseille late on in the second half. But what caught my eye was that Pukki was, it was almost like they were in their set positions. We know that they've brought in this Alan Russell and the emphasis now is on set pieces and restarts. But even a defensive throw, you know, there was Pukki pointing to where Hugo needed to be. And it was that, you could see that there was a structure to it and a method to what they were trying to do. And something as I say, inconsequential, you would see him as a defensive throw to defend. But it sort of signified or signalled, you know, the work that's gone in on the training ground. You started to see it for the first time. But, you know, in a type of game where they didn't have as much of the ball as the opponent and they were counter-attacking teams, now we flip that and they go into the Championship this season. Is that going to happen too often where they're basically going to concede possession and draw teams on and then hit them on the break? Maybe one or two opponents, but the vast majority, particularly at Carrow Road, it'll be low blocks defensively and can you break us down? So that's my only caveat in terms of the performance, as good as it was, is that the type of challenge they will face routinely in the championship? I think the answer is no. So, but, you know, and that's why it was a little bit more concerning the first half at Cambridge, because they did face a team who were well-organised and well-structured and they did struggle to break them down. But, you know, in the second half, they did find those pockets and they had players like Cantwell who were very creative and could find those spaces and good movement from the likes of Pukki and Rashica. So, you know, we will see. They've got the good enough players, I think, to handle that challenge on a weekly basis. But, you know, I wouldn't look at Marseille as the template in terms of the approach that Norwich will adopt or can adopt in the championship, because I think the onus most often in the championship will be on them to force the pace and them to have lots of the ball, lots of territory, and then being good enough to, in a very well-marshalled sort of defensive structure they're going to face, can they find the key to unlock the door more often than not? So, but, you know, that's for another day. The reality was they did play a team who were going to be in the Champions League with very, very well-known players, and they were more than merited to walk off the pitch there, having won that game 3-0. So, you know, you can only deal with the challenge in front of you. And on that day, Norwich was superior in every facet, and it was great to see, because, you know, you're right, Connor, to go back to what you discussed at the outset, you know, post King's Lynn, there was a sense that, you know, we haven't quite seen what Dean Smith's trying to do with this group in pre-season. You know, where's the template in terms of on the ball, off the ball? Where's the style? Where's the structure? We wasn't saying that after the Marseille game. So in that regard, massive leap forward.
Yeah, completely. And it feels to me like that was a game for Dean Smith to put some of the elements that he wants to see from this Norwich City side into practice. I mean, you kind of mentioned the counter-attacking. It does feel like he wants counter-attacking situations at times, even if they're not counter-attacks. And also, I thought the counter-pressing again element, which is something that he's repeated throughout pre-season that he wants to see improved, that was at play as well. And probably the best way to improve your pressing is by playing teams who dominate possession. So I guess there's probably a little bit of common sense behind that. That will also probably be a factor when they go to Celtic, who are another team who are a bit gung-ho, play inverted fullbacks, like to dominate possession. It's a completely different test to probably anything they'll face in the Championship. Not being disrespectful to Rotherham, but I can't imagine them going to the New York Stadium and facing inverted fullbacks. So it's a different challenge designed to test different elements, I think, of what they're trying to do. And then hopefully they'll emerge and all of those pieces will slot together. If not at Cardiff, then hopefully soon after. So it's all very interesting how it's panning out, and we'll discuss Scotland right at the end of the show. Let's hear from Dean Smith. Here's what he had to say after a very, very hot night in Cambridge. I think it was actually hotter at kickoff at the Abbey than it probably was in Fos St Mer when they kicked off against Marseille on Saturday. Here's what Norwich City's boss had to say.
Bizarre circumstances today with all the heat. I mean, it's a sort of balmy 30 degrees now, but have you ever had anything like that in a football match before?
No, it's been a weird few days, to be honest. I mean, we played in Marseille on Saturday. We're due to fly back Saturday night, and you know, the plane got grounded, so we ended up not getting back till 2 o'clock on Sunday, and that was about the same conditions as it was here. And then, obviously, trained early, you know, to try and get out as much of the heat as you can. But to hear a referee at the start saying we're going to have a drinks break every 15 minutes just tells you the conditions that we're playing in at the moment.
Did you have to do anything special with the lads, or you obviously had the heat in Marseille, or was it just as you were?
We were due to be in this morning, but I didn't feel that it was was right to get them in this morning. It was too hot. So we just reported for a pre-match and then came to the game today. And, you know, we spoke to Cambridge last night and got the game put back another 15 minutes. And fortunately, it looked like a cloud just covered up the sun a little bit. And it did drop just before, you know, the game started.
Yeah, and the first half, really competitive. I mean, it was a noisy crowd here. It felt a little bit like a derby in a way, because they're just up the road. And you must have been pleased with that. They're probably the most competitive test so far.
No, I thought Marseille was a lot competitive, very competitive. But I think you saw two sides of us today. I thought it was average City in the first half and Norwich City in the second. You know, I thought we used probably the heat as a bit of an excuse, and our application wasn't where it needed to be. We lost out to most first balls and second balls, and that's not what we've been in pre-season. And to be fair, the lads you know, said that themselves after the game at half time in the dressing room. So they knew that the application should have been better. We know it was trying conditions, and we know it's Adam's first 45 minutes for us. It's the first time we played 4-4-2, but we keep saying, you know, excuses are well-planned lies, and we won't be using them. So, you know, we weren't good enough in the first half and deservedly went in behind. But really pleased, you know, with the second half, the application, the subs who came on. I thought Liam Gibbs did really well when he came on. I thought Sarge was outstanding. You know, so, you know, yeah, a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde performance, but you get that during pre-season, and, you know, especially with all the changes that we're having.
And Jordan Hughgill, second half, I mean, that's 4-2 from him. I mean, he's in some form, isn't he? He's getting the goals, which is what you want from your number nine.
Certainly do, and, you know, he's made an impact in the last couple of games to get them goals as well. You know, really good finish the first and the second. You know, he's cut back onto his right foot and scored. You know, we probably could have scored, you know, two or three more in the second half, but they probably could have scored one or two more in the first half. So, but yeah, really pleased with the impact that, you know, the likes of Jordan have made and Al have made. You know, Sam, since coming back from their loan spells last season.
I was going to say, you know, much has been made about you've only brought a couple of players in, your players, if you like, but you have got a lot coming in, including Danal Sonani and various other ones. So it's nice to have that kind of fresh impetus into the squad.
Yeah, I think I said at the end of last season, you know, them four coming back into training the last week just freshened, you know, the whole training ground up, and that's continued, you know, through pre-season. You know, like having the likes of Isaac in the dressing room, and now Gabrielle as well. You know, it's brightened things up.
And just talk to us about Gabrielle Sara. He's obviously, you know, this is the first time I've had a chance to say, why did you want to sign him? Why was he so important to bring in?
He's a top player. I think he's got a lot of development in him as well. He brings a lot of energy into the team. He's skillful. He can see a pass. His running stats are crazy. You know, and he just wants to get better as well. Technically, he's a gifted player. You know, and these South American boys are tough cookies as well. And you know, he's another one who'll come into the team and will give everything.
A couple of possible outgoings. We saw reports today of Christoph Zimmermann in Germany, perhaps going back to Germany. Any comment on that? Is there truth in that?
Yeah, we've had a club that's you know, asked the question about Zimbo, and we've given him the opportunity to make a decision. I think everybody knows how much Zimbo means to this football club and how much this football club means to him. His character shines through, and he probably hasn't had as much football as he would have liked in the last 18 months. So it would have been wrong of us as a club to not give him this opportunity that's turned up for him, and he's got a tough decision to make now. But if he chooses to go, then he goes with everybody's best wishes at this football club, because I think he showed as a player and a person, you know, the sort of characters that we want at this football club.
And just to confirm, is that Darmstadt in Bundesliga 2?
I can't say at the moment.
That's fine. And just on Christoph Jolis, he wasn't involved tonight. Reports coming out from Greece saying that perhaps he's on the move as well. Any comment on Jolis's future?
Yeah, there's a few clubs who've been asking whether they could take him on loan. So it's a possibility that he could go out on loan. He's a player who has got lots of potential. Unfortunately, he didn't play an awful lot of minutes last season, but we still believe, you know, there's potential to come out of him that we can't give him as much game time as he probably needs this season. So, you know, in the long run for him and the football club, we think it's better that he goes out alone and goes and further develops and comes back full of confidence after that.
And just finally from me, obviously two more games, Celtic and Hibernian, and that'll be a tasty one up there in Scotland. And then it's all roads lead to Cardiff. How are you feeling in this? It's last week. Lots of goals going in, which is important.
Yeah, no. The application of the players throughout training, throughout pre-season, has been second to none. They've been excellent. Their attitudes, the way they've gone about it. As I've said, last season's gone. It's a new beginning for them. And you know, I thought Todd came on today and he looks a different player at the moment, and you know, told him that as well. And you know, it's not only Todd, the players who were involved last season have put that behind them very quickly, and we're looking forward to the start now.
And you must be really happy with Todd, because he really looked like he wanted to be involved tonight, and that's good for Norwich City Football Club.
Yeah, it is. You know, Danal as well, you know, he's been really, really good on the training ground. He was good on Saturday against Marseille. You know, hopefully I've got some real tough decisions to make next Saturday, which is what I want.
Thanks, Dean.
Cheers, thank you.
just a couple from me, if I may. I mean, I obviously hate guessing, but I'm assuming you've got two games coming up and two goalkeepers you can get 90 minutes. So you had Michael out tonight to get 90 minutes in. I mean, the saves he pulled off tonight, was there something else?
Yeah, he made some really good saves. He made a really good save in the game against in Germany as well from a free kick. But, you know, goalkeepers need to play 90 minutes. Giving them 45 minutes at times, they don't get their concentration tested, and that's, you know, probably the key for goalkeepers. So, you know, my idea was to give them all 90 minutes over the next three games.
And Michael's obviously you know, he's shown what he gives in terms of the group, and I'm guessing he's quite important to that goalkeeping group as well.
He's very important to the dressing room as a whole. So it was important. I read somewhere today, or somebody mentioned it in the dressing room, that he's 6 years ago today, I think, he signed for the club. But he's an important part of the dressing room, and especially the goalkeeper school.
Has Jonathan Tomkinson's emergence helped allow you to consider Christoph Zimmermann leaving?
Yes and no. Yes, because his emergence has, you know, allowed us to give Zimbo the opportunity, but we felt we needed to anyway because of the person that Zimbo is.
Yeah, brilliant.
Cheers.
No Byram, no Gibson, sorry, tonight.
Yeah, no, they've both got slight strains, so there was no risk, and we probably won't risk them the weekend as well if they're still similar.
Any concern, obviously, with Sam and his sort of backstory there the last 2 years or so? That, I mean, that's three friendlies he's not been available, or you just got to manage him very...
No, we just have to manage him. You know, there's nobody more disappointed than Sam, you know, but he just felt something. So, you know, I've always said to all the players before the game, if you feel anything, let us know. You know, there's no medals for these games. It's for the, you know, the 1-46 games.
So players who have come back, Adam Eder, first time tonight. I know he played in the development side Friday, but you must be delighted because you showed just before he got that knee injury that you really believe he can start games and influence games for Norwich.
Yeah, I thought he looked really strong as well today. He's done some work in the gym. He's worked really hard in his rehab to get back. You know, and he can be a handful for us this season. But all four of the forwards at the moment, you know, are doing well and working hard. We know what Timo Pukki can do. Sarge, I think's been outstanding in the two couple of 45s that he's had so far, because he's coming back from his injury as well, and Jordan's been scoring goals. And, you know, as you say, Adam Eder, it's great to have him back as well.
Just one on Saro, and we saw some footage and he looked like he wasn't too far away, but where is he in sort of your head in terms of timeline and Cardiff?
So I'm hoping that he'll be on the training ground with us on Monday, so after the Saturday Sunday games, hoping he'll be on the training ground with us on the Monday. Whether the Cardiff game comes too soon, I don't know, but we'll have a good look at him first.
Just final one, Scotland, Celtic, speaks for himself, Hibs as well, two top five Scottish sides. What do you want out of those two, three in your last two games, please?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've still got the hardest part for me is balancing teams during pre-season, but I like to have the last two games, you know, back to back, so we can get 90 minutes into all the players. But I've got to find the right balance to go and be really competitive in two what are really tasty games. It'll be great for some players going to Parkhead for the first time in front of a lot of fans. It's a great stadium, and it'll be a good atmosphere, and then Easter Road on the Sunday as well. So, you know, I want to see more of what we did in the second half today, and less of what we did in the first.
Yeah, as you say, average Norwich seat. Without, obviously you're not going to divulge, but in your own head now, how close are you to sort of knowing you're 11 for Cardiff, or is there still plenty of places to
play? No, there's places to play for still, but, you know, obviously all the games I'm taking in, you know, there's a team shaping in my mind.
We live Norwich City.
The build-up.
The passion. The drama.
The last-minute winners.
The debate.
That's why we've created Pink and Plus. Pink and Plus. The app that takes you beyond the headlines.
With exclusive columns, blogs, podcasts and videos, we've got you covered.
Subscribe today. Pink and Plus. Stay ahead of the game.
Download now on the App Store and on Google Play.
So that was Dean Smith after Tuesday night's game against Cambridge, a 3-1 win for Norwich City to continue their unbeaten pre-season preparations. Pat, if we go to off the pitch stuff, there was probably two noticeable absentees in particular for Norwich City, probably for transfer related reasons. If we start with Christos Solis, he's someone who I think as early as the end of May, we were reporting interest from Club Bruges. I think we had another piece last week, maybe the week before that, saying that it was probably edging a little bit closer. It feels like we're nearly there now for Christos Solis, and it does sound like it's going to be a low move away. Dean Smith said a few clubs interested, so not absolutely nailed on to be Club Bruges at this moment in time. I think probably more will come clear over the coming days and weeks. But if he's got to a stage where he's not involved in Norwich City squad, we're probably looking at it being days away, aren't we? Christos Solis completing his loan exit away from Norwich City.
Looks that way, Connor. Yeah, particularly if there's multiple options there in the wind. There was interest. It was one or two clubs in Holland, I think, linked with him as well, as I recall, earlier summer. I mean, pretty much from the end of last season, we've said, I think Solis won't be part of it. And then it's just the path to how you get to that point. Very intriguing that Dean Smith was at pains to talk in terms of a loan as opposed to a permanent exit. You know, is that a signal? Possibly they can't recoup the money they would have spent this time last summer for the guy. Possibly, given, you know, what he didn't do in the intervening period. Will there be buy options attached, as there were with Cantwell when he went to Bournemouth on loan last January? That will become clear in due course. Yeah, look, we're recording this on sort of just past midday on Wednesday, and the Belgian media today are pretty clear that Bruges have had another attempt to sign him. It's worth just pointing out that when Norwich got him, he was very much on Bruges' radar. I think they looked at him in the January window of 2021. Didn't happen for whatever reason, and then Norwich, you know, stepped in going into the Premier League last season. But if there is a long held interest, I think we were discussing last night at Cambridge, they had a player who's moved on now to Milan, is it, for a considerable amount of money. So there is finance available if they're looking at it that way. So maybe the details yet to emerge, but what is irrefutable is Christos Solis is not part of Dean Smith's plans for this season. Whether he is part of his plans moving forward, I have my doubts, because I look at it and Dean Smith came in last November. We're now in July. That's a long body of time, both in terms of the season and then the off-season, for Dean Smith to make up his mind. And who was he playing towards the back end of the Premier League season? Jonathan Rowe, and Tony Springett in those wide positions, not Christos Solis. So that tells me probably Dean Smith has maybe decided he's not for him. But as I say, you know, if it is a loan, then there's always that window of opportunity. He goes away. Dare I say it, a Danel Sanani-style impact to the one he had at Huddersfield last season. And you never know. There may still be a future for Christos Solis at Norwich. But it's looking increasingly like that isn't the case. And this is maybe the first stage in the exit strategy. And, you know, ultimately, it hasn't worked, clearly. And for that, there's probably all parties need to look at why it hasn't worked. But from the outside, you know, maybe I think it was too soon for him in terms of the Premier League, certainly, because when he was exposed to the Premier League, albeit relatively small samples, he did look a long way off it. So, again, without wanting to reopen the debate about the recruitment going into last summer and the Premier League season, it clearly wasn't a deal that had the desired effect. And now it's probably just managing that situation to the benefit of all parties, really. If you're Solis, certainly makes no sense to be sat here, you know, watching 7,000 other wide players ahead of you in the pecking order at Carr Road this season. You need to be out at his age, particularly. He needs to be out because he's still learning the game. You know, it's worth reiterating, he played really relatively little football in his professional career when he arrived at Carr Road. He's still a work in progress, very much so. He's not the finished article. And as a result, he needs to go out and get game time. And maybe on that front, that's a segue into Christoph Zimmermann's situation as well.
Yeah, just to sort of round off on Solis, Charles de Ketelaere, I've probably butchered that pronunciation, is the young midfielder at Club Bruges who hasn't yet signed for AC Milan, but that is seemingly edging ever closer. Reports today that their sporting director, technical director, Paolo Maldini, no less, is in Belgium to try and get that move through. So that would free up some funds. We know that there has been discussions of a potential permanent option inserted in a loan. Whether that is what comes to pass when a deal is completed, we'll have to see. But it maybe feels like possibly Solis arriving would allow Charles de Ketelaere to then leave from a Club Bruges perspective. So that would all add up. Feyenoord were another club who were reportedly interested earlier on in the summer. So a few options there, but we understand that Jolis was pretty keen to move to Belgium. So we'll see how that all transpires. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, Paddy, Christophe Zimmermann, which is has a bit of an end of an era feel about it, doesn't it, really? I mean, it's probably, if we're being completely candid about it, feels like it's been on the cards probably ever since Daniel Farke left the club, really. And when I spoke to Christophe Zimmermann, would have been towards the back end of last season, maybe even start of the summer. He was giving a lecture at the UEA about his career and his pathway, which was a really interesting environment to witness a footballer existing in and being in. But it was a very good talk. I was there for probably the second half of it before we sat down and spoke. He was pretty honest and said to me even then that if you look at how many minutes he played across last season, that wasn't sufficient. That wasn't what he would want. And obviously injury has played a part in that. But also he's just been out of favour since Dean Smith arrived, hasn't played the amount of football that he would like. Norwich City's last German player at the club currently, I know people will look at Onel Hernandez, but he's a Cuban international. So we have to refer to him as Cuban. He was one of the first ones, maybe the first potentially German player to arrive at the club. Does feel end of era, but someone who probably will be remembered really fondly. I'm not sure if I'd quite put him in the legend category, but he's certainly knocking on the door for that because of his contribution, certainly on the pitch, but also probably the human being that he is as well. And that connection that he had with fans, it was a regular occurrence that after a game, you would see him literally head to all four corners of the ground to salute all the fans, win, lose or draw. I mean, he was quite unique as a character at Norwich City, let alone as a footballer.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen, that is a very interesting dynamic. I've seen that legendary status around him sort of debated, both sides of it on social media in the last sort of 24, 48 hours. And, you know, you can take your measure where you want to take it. But I thought there was a good point made in that debate that, you know, a legend for some people is giving absolutely everything to the extent of their abilities. You know, as he had the impact of a Buendia in terms of, the dragging a team up and putting them onto a different level, or Madison even in that sort of season where the rest of it was pretty much dross, but his performances individually, maybe not. I mean, there was that, for me, I always go back to the second part of the 18-19 title winning season when he was kind of thrust together with a young Ben Godfrey, mainly through injuries to Closer and Hanley, who probably would have been Farker's first choice. And those two, with Zimmermann wearing the armband, it's worth to say, they anchored that run into that memorable, unexpected, joyous Premier League promotion. And for that, you know, you can't dispute that he played a full part. And but ultimately, Dean Smith, when he talked about this after the game at Cambridge, you referenced it as well. Clearly, they've had conversations and it's ran along the lines of Zimmermann over the last 18 months hasn't played enough football to the level that he wants to be playing. He's 29 now. He got into the professional ranks pretty late. You know, he's one of those who was umming and ahhing in German regional football, whether he went sort of, I think, the teaching route he discussed, and maybe he will return to that one day. So particularly if you've come to the game late, the professional game, you want to maximise every opportunity you can get to spend time on the pitch. You know, and last season, 5 appearances, only 2 starts in the Premier League. Nowhere near enough, really. And if he is fit and healthy, because that is obviously the issues that have dogged him, really, in the recent seasons at Norwich. But if he is now fit and healthy and his body stands the strain, then why wouldn't he want to go and explore an opportunity, particularly as well, you know, if it is Darmstadt, you know, that's local to where he's from in Germany and his family. So there will be those ties, I'm sure, as well, bringing him back to his home. And, you know, maybe he's now already thinking about, you talked about a talk he did at the UEA, I'm sure, in the sort of character that he is, he's probably already thinking about the life after football and transitioning. And this might be part of that journey, really, to go back with a young family and settle back in Germany again and enjoy whatever's left of his football career. So as Dean Smith said, there has been an approach. He now, the ball's firmly in his court. He has a decision to make. If he goes, he'll go with the full blessings of everybody inside the club. And I'm sure every Norwich fan as well, because for what he came to the club as, you know, he was a free transfer, wasn't he? I think off the top of my head. I think he was a free transfer, wasn't he? You know, a defender in Dortmund's second team, essentially. And you look back at what he's given on and off the pitch. You know, I remember, you know, during the height of the pandemic and, you know, he was out there delivering parcels and checking on, you know, vulnerable people in the community as part of the CSF's, the Community Sports Foundation's work. You know, that wasn't for show. He, you know, he would often be at events at Carrow Park, inclusion events, disability events. You know, he is a really special human being, and you know, he has left a mark, and he will leave a mark both on the pitch and off the pitch. And you know, I think you'd only echo what Dean Smith said. If he goes, he will go with the best wishes of every person who's been privileged to be part of his journey at Norwich.
Yeah, it was really interesting, because at that talk, he told the story of how his move to Norwich came about. And obviously, Daniel Farke played a really key role in that. But he was, you know, as we know, a fourth tier German player. He was pretty short on options, if he was being honest with himself. He was pretty much ready and had agreed to sign or was about to sign for a Danish second division club when late one night a text came through from Daniel Farke asking about his availability and whether he'd fancy moving to Norwich, and he had to let down that Danish second tier club to move to Norwich. I mean, from the position he was in as a fourth tier German player playing for Borussia Dortmund's second team to becoming a Premier League footballer, and if we're honest, it was probably that tackle against Sebastian Haller, and since then probably hasn't looked the same player, if we're being completely honest, and has had a few more injuries than he would like. I remember at the start of his Norwich career, he was almost felt like he was indestructible at times. He played so many games, particularly in that first and second year under Daniel Farke, and probably a player who will be associated with him. And he admitted even in his talk that he'd like to work with Daniel Farke again, but caveated that by saying that he didn't really think his kind of future career would be in football coaching or football management, because it's so short term and because there's a lot of of hassle that comes with that. You're constantly being uprooted. There's no long termism in the game, and it feels like sort of managers' tenures are decreasing rather than increasing with time. He wants to be settled. I think he spoke about potentially maybe exploring an opportunity that was football and education related, maybe not necessarily teaching, but maybe some of these footballing kind of pathways, similar, I guess, to maybe what Alex Tetti is trying to do at Rosenberg. I would imagine that would appeal to him, but no doubt he's someone that Norwich City fans will wish well, and someone who, as a footballer, I found really fascinating to speak to, because he wasn't quite media trained a lot of the time. You'd always get a straight answer from him. He was really honest, I think, when you spoke to him. And yeah, just a really good guy. So Zimmerman, we'll leave with everyone's best wishes, I'm sure. Paddy, if we finish off then by speaking about Gabriel Sara, we spoke about him on last week's pod, where we pretty much said he would sign. He has signed a permanent deal, around an initial 6 million, we're led to believe, with add-ons that could potentially take that to being a club record deal, although I think there's some dispute from the club side or whether that's actually the case or not. But that's certainly the reported figures. Brazilian midfielder, first Brazilian to play for Norwich City. He's obviously, the club have released kind of a first day video where we saw his first day, and he was kind of put through his paces in the gym and signing the contract and all of that. But there's some really encouraging shots of him on the training pitch, completing kind of these various physical activities, nothing with a sort of a ball at his feet. But I think there was even, I watched it this morning, there was even a clip from Norwich City's head of medical, Chris Burton, where he said 10 weeks post-op, he's in a really good position. And you put that question to Dean Smith last night, as listeners would have heard earlier on, and he kind of said about how he's hoping to get him back in training for Monday. When do you feel, in terms of timeline, is realistic to not expect him to obviously play for Norwich City, but probably to expect him to become a regular fixture in this Norwich City side? Everyone heard Dean Smith's appraisal in that chat earlier in the podcast. He rates him very highly. He's clearly driven this signing. When can we expect him, from a fitness perspective, do you feel, to actually be fully embedded in that Norwich City team?
Well, we were discussing this prior to recording the pod, and I think if you roll it on logically, he's back in full team training from next Monday. That's the week leading into Cardiff. Very unlikely you would see him having any role to play. I mean, as we've just mapped out there, essentially his pre-season starts next Monday, because he's not been able to train. He's obviously done his rehab, but it's a different level of training completely. So Cardiff, no. Following week, another week's training. Wigan, no for me. But then I think the following midweek, they got Birmingham at home, haven't they, in the League Cup. I think it's August the 9th off the top of my head, which is, as we record here, you're getting on for kind of 2 to 3 weeks from here. So that, I think, would seem logical. You know, it isn't the muck and nettles of Championship combat with points at stake. Yes, they'll want to progress, but far more importantly for the season ahead, if you could get Gabriel Sara to get some game time in that game, and he looks the part and he comes through it and there's no qualms about his fitness element, but also the footballing side of it, then from there on, for me, he's a viable option. I must confess, it's escaped my attention who they've got after immediately after Blues in the League Cup in terms of their next Championship game, but it'll be that following weekend, and that for me, subject to that timeline, surely he's ready to go if he's proven his fitness and you've got him out on the park and you know, showing a few little bits and pieces of what he can do with a ball at his feet, then you know, let's not hold him back, because as Dean Smith rightly, we played that clip eulogising about the guy. You know, he rates this guy highly. What did he say? His running numbers are ridiculous, and his ability with the ball, he's got that toughness you associate with the Brazilian footballers. You know, he's worked with players like Douglas Luiz and Wesley, is it, at West at Villa. So he understands the type of player he's dealing with. And, you know, Dean Smith, I don't think, is given to hyperbole or being overly effusive from my dealings with him so far. But when he speaks about Gabriel Zara, you can almost sense tangibly the excitement he has at working with a player who they feel still so much potential, but it already looks like he could have a major impact on Norwich's season. But a player who could, moving forward, mould him into, you know, a really, really good talent and a key man for Norwich, certainly the next two or three seasons. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Would you share that assessment, Connor? Birmingham League Cup, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I've got the fixtures up in front of me, and actually thereafter, August is pretty packed, obviously because of the change in Championship schedule because of the World Cup. It does look a bit more condensed. So you look after Birmingham. They've actually got five Championship games, I think, and until the end of August. And I think you'd probably slot another round of the EFL Cup between their home game against Millwall and their away game to Sunderland, obviously on the Saturday. There's a free midweek in there that feels like that would probably be the second round of the competition. If I was to hazard a guess, I could probably find out. But yeah, you look at it then, that's what, 2.5 weeks from here. That gives him sufficient time. Could I see him being included in the squads for Cardiff and Wigan? Absolutely. Wouldn't surprise me, actually, if they maybe waited and gave him a Carrow Road debut against Wigan on the 6th of August. And then, of course, he could make his first start against Birmingham. Then they travel to Hull. Then it's Huddersfield, Millwall, probably the second round of the EFL Cup, which hopefully maybe even we'll possibly get to see Isaac Hayden in that one before they then go to Sunderland and Birmingham to kind of round off August. There's plenty of games there. You'd imagine hopefully by the end of August he'll be fully in a rhythm, and maybe even if he's not starting all of those games, he will start maybe a fair few of them, and we'll be able to fully assess what sort of player he is, because I think there's still some kind of intrigue and also confusion as well. Maybe what he's going to be like. You speak to different people and some maybe feel he's going to be the best in the Championship, and others feel that actually he was probably a little bit better when he played on the wing, and he's probably still got a lot of development left in him. And actually, I think Dean Smith said that last night, didn't he? So there's plenty of intrigue around him. It probably feels like he's going to be next to Kenny McLean in that kind of double eight in a 4-3-3, as we kind of outlined last week. But that is kind of the timeline I would put. I mean, just while we're on injuries as well, there's a couple of other updates. I mean, tell us a little bit about Sam Byram and Ben Gibson, both of whom were missing. But obviously, Sam Byram's history probably makes that injury feel a little bit more concerning than perhaps Ben Gibson's at this moment in time.
True. But then Dean Smith did also in that answer say probably not going to see him in Scotland either. So that does raise the concern level if essentially, given that's the final leg of pre-season, you're going into the Cardiff game and you've not had Gibson at your disposal for the last three friendlies, and Byram, well, at that stage, that would be getting on for five, I think, he's missed. And then you overlay, there's a player who, you know, had nearly 2 years out of the game and came back last season and got injured at, I think it was Tottenham on the final day, didn't I? I think he limped out there and I think he locked his, let's say, hip or something like that, off the top of my head, is what Dean Smith said. But on these two, he coupled them together, Dean Smith, and he just said strain. So that sounds like a muscular type injury, maybe a reflection of the, you know, the work they've put in, hard pitches as well, pre-season, is a grind. Gibson has had his injury issues along the way, nothing mega, mega serious, but, you know, he has had periods out since he's arrived at Norwich. Is there an element of managing players? You just touched on it in your previous thoughts there, Connor, that, you know, there is very little respite once the season begins, and you don't really want to be going in with players who are carrying injuries or susceptible to breaking down. So maybe erring on the side of the caution at the minute. But purely on the Byram element, Gibson for me, less of a concern for Cardiff, because you've obviously got, you know, barring any injuries between now and then, you've got Hanley, you've got Ovar Bamadeli. I'd be very content if that was the centre-back duo going into the Cardiff game. Byron, well, of course, Max Aarons is still in the building, and there's no seemingly sign that he will be exiting the building anytime soon in this part of the transfer window. So again, there wouldn't be a concern in terms of Max Aarons would be ready to go for Cardiff. But more broadly, you know, Sam Byram, you don't really want that sense that at the back of your mind, if you're Dean Smith, is the injury issues with him. Because footballing-wise, I don't think there's any debate. Dean Smith, having said earlier on that he eulogised about Zaha, he was doing a lot of eulogising about Sam Byram towards the end of last season, talking about him as captaincy material and a player who, when they first arrived him in Shakespeare, they knew about him, obviously, as they did about all those players, but had really surprised him how good Sam Byram was. So those comments clearly indicated Sam Byram was set for a major role under Dean Smith in the Championship. At the minute, he's obviously having to keep him in reserve. So that's not an ideal situation. It's not ideal for the player as well. He would have wanted a full, unencumbered pre-season, given his injury record, to feel he was really hardened and ready to go for the grind ahead. So one to keep an eye on, a concern at this stage, no doubt. But maybe it's on a broader zooming out element, it just underlines the depth that Norwich have, that we're talking about two injuries to potentially two key players. But for Cardiff, they can still go with Max Aarons on the right and Hanley and Omobamadeli in the middle of the park. Any other Championship team would take that all day long.
Yeah, they absolutely would. Let's conclude the pod then by looking ahead to that doubleheader at Scotland, in Scotland, sorry. We started about the weather, so we'll end with the weather. I mean, you kind of touched upon the weather forecast, Paddy. I'll read it for you. As things stand, obviously, this will change about 19 different times by the time we actually get to Edinburgh. But Friday, 18 degrees. Saturday, 21. Sunday, 21. Monday, 19. That sounds pretty glorious, doesn't it? For me and you, who clearly not fans of the heat. But in all seriousness, a completely different test for Norwich City. And I've said this a few times, but shows the absurdity of how many players they're carrying at the moment, that they can play two friendlies on two separate days with two separate squads and probably have a few players spare as well. Obviously, the aim will be to get 90 minutes into a host of the players. I mean, how do you view this weekend? Do you feel that the 11 that we see at Celtic is probably going to be as close to the one at Cardiff as we're going to get in this pre-season? And what does that maybe say about the Hibs contest? I mean, how do you kind of see the dynamics working out in terms of the two squads that are selected for the two games?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think the final question I put to Dean Smith at Cambridge was, in your own mind, because he's not going to reveal it, you know, how close are you, injury and fitness allowing at this stage, to your 11 for Cardiff? And he said, I think something along the lines of, you know, yeah, there's things forming in his mind, but then he went on to talk in a manner of a man who still has a few puzzlers, and why wouldn't he? You know, top end of the pitch defensively, across the middle, wide areas, everywhere you look, you know, there are players staking claims to be part of that 11 when in real action begins at Cardiff on July the 30th. So, no, I wouldn't probably at this stage take that Celtic team sheet as derivative, because I think he will still be in that mode where he's unsure about a few areas of his squad. It probably will be quite illuminating to us looking at it and trying to second guess Dean Smith how these two lineups play out. I mean, you can conceivably see Gunn starts one game, maybe plays one game and Krul the other. But for Cardiff, what does that tell us about who gets the nod? Because they feel like they're very neck and neck, very evenly matched at the minute. So, I think there'll still be an element once we get post-Hibs and we're then gearing fully up for Cardiff. I think there'll still be an element, more than an element. In fact, it'll be very hard for anybody to say with any confidence, right, here's Dean Smith's 11 for Cardiff. And this is why, you know, there's not really any debate front to back. I don't think that's going to be the case. But that's what you want. That's what surely Dean Smith wants, a situation where he sits down at the team hotel Friday night in South Wales and him and Shakespeare are still pondering, you know, well, do we go with X? Do we go with Y? You made a very good point, I thought, earlier in the pod, you know, the five sub rule, that expansion, that should surely favour a squad with the depth of Norwich moving forward now that, you know, those in-game changes, which are massive, and Norwich were not really able to do in the Premier League because they didn't have the quality and depth to improve what they had already on the park. That isn't going to be the case in the Championship. And And so that affords Dean Smith a degree of, well, yes, I'll go with this 11, but I've also got the capacity, if and when required during a game, to make changes and not materially weaken the side on the pitch. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's really now the challenge for Dean Smith in the next two friendly games, but 7-8 days, is to, you know, percolate all these kind of poses and dilemmas and competitive battles that seem to have erupted all the way through that starting lineup and arrive at a solution. And that's what he's paid to do. That's his job. But ultimately arrive at a solution where he has, from the minute go at Cardiff, an 11 on the park who really send out a statement that Norwich are probably going to be the team to beat. And if you get that, then, you know, I think there'll be quite a few championship teams will look at that 11 at Cardiff, see what Norwich have in reserve on the bench and think, we finish above them, we're probably getting promoted.
Yep, absolutely. That feels like a perfect place to leave it this week then. Thank you very much for listening. As we said, we will be in Scotland this weekend to cover both of those games against Celtic and Hibernian. It's going to be fascinating to see, going to be a fascinating test for Norwich City as well. And then it will be all focus on Cardiff and that opening game of the season now, which is just over a week away, which it feels incredibly exciting, as it always does when the new season comes around. Pinken.com, of course, the place to go. If you're yet to take out a trial for the Pinken Plus app, then this really is the best time ahead of a weekend in Scotland. We're going to have plenty of exclusive content on there from our trip across the border. So make sure you keep it locked to all of our channels across them. We'll, of course, have a podcast as well from Scotland, I would imagine, and all of that good stuff. To keep you entertained as we approach the start of the championship season. Enjoy the rest of your week. Keep cool, keep safe, keep hydrated, and we'll see you again very, very soon.